Mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Just moments from the start of the WHFR Journal here on 89.3. And a quick reminder, you are listening to listener-supported non-commercial radio from Henry Ford College. We are WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the WHFR Journal on this, the last day of January 2025. Susan McGraw with you. Thanks for tuning in. Our second segment today is going to consist of an airing of an event that took place on January the 16th. It was a collaboration with Dearborn Heights and called A Tale of Our Cities, an opportunity for people to have a meet and greet and some time to chat with Mayor Bill Bazzi from Dearborn Heights and Abdullah Hamoud from Dearborn, and we will present the speech portion and the Q&A in just a bit in our second segment today. But first, we're going to talk to HFC instructor Joel Geffen about an artist exhibit that is already underway called Pathways to the Self. It sounds fascinating, and we welcome Joel to this first portion of our broadcast. Joel, tell us a little bit about how you got into Pathways to the Self.
I'll start just briefly with my background. Academically, I have a doctorate in religious studies. And if you take a look at that word religion, look at where it comes from, it's two words. It's R-E, re, which is to repeat, ligare, like a ligament, to bind again. So religion is about binding together once more, to pull together once more. So that background plays into my photography, my art. I've been photographic since I was a kid, but I began taking it seriously when my father became mortally ill with cancer, and I needed a break. I needed something beautiful in my life. And at that time, I enrolled in a photography program, and after he passed away, I completed it. Fast forward, 7 years ago, I decided to start a group that I called Pathways, which is short for Pathways to the Self. The whole goal is for aspiring photographers. They don't need any art background. They don't need any formal photography background to come together and learn why they photograph what they do. If you think about it, most photography groups, most photographers around the world typically photograph what's in front of their camera lens. They see a landscape, they photograph it. They see a loved one, they photograph them. That's very common, very normal. It's wonderful. But to take it another step beyond that, we can ask why. Most people don't photograph everything under the sun. They typically photograph one or two or three areas: sports, family, landscapes, pets, something. So the question is, why? Why? Why do you do what you do? Why are you a teacher? Why are you a physician? Why are you an accountant? Why do you own a gas station? Why, why? And some of these, yeah, I'm the perennial five-year-old. So some of these questions are, well, I own a gas station because I need to eat, my family needs to eat, and it's an excellent way to derive income. But sometimes the answers are a little different. Sometimes people might get to, like, my group and I have been working together for 7 years. It has taken 7 years of moving forward, taking a break, moving forward, taking a break, moving forward, taking a break, because this is hard work. If any of us, if any of the folks listening right now, stop to think what drives them, what motivates them, what are their passions in life, what do they care about? And if they say, well, I care about my family, maybe we can ask why. And they'll say, well, it's my family. Well, but why do you care? Well, I love them. All right, why do you love them? Because they're my blood, they're my kin, I raised them, or I was raised by them. Why does that matter? Well, connections matter. Ah, now we're getting somewhere. Why do connections matter? Connections matter because this is the most important part of my whole life. Now we have it. And if you're a photographer, a painter, a sculptor, a dancer, a singer, whatever, once you know why you do what you do, you can then focus your energies into that because it's a place of natural talent. Notice I didn't say skill. Skills are built, right? Talent, you're born with this. You're born with it. And if your life experiences have directed you to care deeply about connection, then why not orient your life toward that? Why not help? Why not help people in whatever your job is? It's not just about photography. It's whatever you do. Whatever is inside you that is most you, flow with that, go with that, and see what opens up. The photography group I've been working with for 7 years is finally ready for their first exhibition. And we have former Henry Ford College professors, Pamela Sayer. We have a retired bank IT systems manager. We have a person who is currently working for the Michigan State Department of Agriculture protecting animals. We have all kinds of people. The show will open. The group is called Pathways, short for Pathways to the Self. And the exhibition is all about why do these individuals photograph what they do? They have spent 7 years figuring this out. It's not a quick thing. And it's usually uncomfortable.
You know, that's what I have so many things I want to follow up on here, Joel. Please. Let me jump in for just a minute because something just clicked in my head. And again, as a reminder, and thank you for being here and listening today to this interesting conversation with HFC aficionado and creative person extraordinaire Joel Geffen, and we are talking on the journal today about Pathways to the Self, an exhibit that is actually just opened, already open, and going on through the middle of March. So we're going to also talk a little bit about an opportunity to experience a special reception, which is coming up in about a week, actually, I think a week from today. So something just clicked, Joel, as we're talking about you and Pam and Tim Haber, is it, and Pollyanne McKillop as the four people in the group that you're referring to. I think a lot of people, and maybe I'm lumped into this, we kind of feel like we need to wait to do all that figuring out before we actually, in this, using this as a metaphor, pick up the camera and start to shoot. You know what I'm saying? But 7 years of doing this has kind of, as you said, gotten you to this realization, this understanding. So it seems to me the lesson in all of this is if we wait to think we've got it all figured out, we're not probably going to be doing very much of anything. Is that accurate?
That's fair. I mean, think about it this way. We all know that life is complicated. It's just the way it is. And if we wait until we're truly ready, we feel ready. And this includes me, by the way. If we wait until we're totally ready, we're never going to do much of anything. If we wait until we're totally ready to walk, well, we're still going to be crawling around on the floor because we're never totally ready. If we wait until we're totally ready to drive, we'll probably never get behind a wheel. If we wait till we're totally ready to take that first college class, we probably won't go. If we wait till we're totally ready for that relationship, we may miss out on something beautiful. So sometimes, maybe even often, we have to try something before we feel completely secure in it. And we will grow within it as we go.
Yeah, I'm often telling students on the first day or even the first week or even into the second week when they say, well, I don't know how to do this. And I said, well, that's why you're in school. You know, that's why you're here. And be open to that. And if you already knew how to do this, I would say this is probably a waste of time, right? So that's sort of that same mindset. But something this artistic and this creative, I think, is going to always have some ebb and flow. And maybe, as you said, your to date 7-year journey in this with this particular group and doing these particular this particular pathway, if you will, feels like there should be, and I suspect there is, some room for the highs and the lows, depending on emotion and life circumstances and things beyond our control, as well as decisions that we've made that, you know, are in our control, but we regret them, or, you know, whatever the case, and people coming in and out of our lives. How much of that would you say, and I know you can't specifically speak for the others, but how much of that has impacted these 7 years and your artistic journey? And will we see that represented in the photography exhibit?
I'll start at the end of that. You will get represented in the exhibit. These are finished exhibits. And what I mean by that is they're polished at this point. A lot of thought has gone into the ideas behind them as each artist says, this is why I do what I do. And these are very personal reasons. So the art you're going to see occurs on two levels. You see what you see in the print. That's level number one. That's like looking through the camera or your cell phone and seeing what's on the other side. But then there's the question of what are you really, really photographing? Are you really photographing your child, your spouse, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your grandma, your grandpa, your aunt, your uncle? Is that what you're doing? Or are you kind of photographing connection, love, care, right? So that has been a journey. So you will see that when you come to the show in their artist statements and in the titles of the pieces. And the artist will be there to meet you and greet you. And that's going to be Friday night, February 7th. From 6:30 to 8:30, everybody is invited. Bring a lot of people. We're going to have food. Come and eat. I do not want to take this home. So you will see that. And there have been ebbs and flows. We have had members become sick and pass away. We have had members leave the group for their own personal reasons. We have had people struggling with the normal things of life. As we've gone along as a group, we have survived COVID together. We managed to stay together. We went to Zoom instead of in person. Now we're back to in person. There are always, always ebbs and flows. And what keeps this group together is that they honestly, legitimately care about each other as human beings. And that carries us through everything.
Finding one's group, one's tribe, as we often say, is certainly an important aspect of life purpose and happiness, I suppose. How does one do that? How did this whole thing, you know, kind of come together? And if I'm an aspiring artist or a poet, a songwriter, you know, some mixed media situation, how do I find other like-minded people to grow with as opposed to just learn from?
That is a fabulous question. I wish I had just like a little black book or a little red book I could open and give you. Oh, that's right. It's on page 46, paragraph line 3. I don't have that book yet. So I guess, wow, how do I answer that? Okay, if you're looking for like-minded people, probably a good starting point would be with a meetup group or similar. That would be a great starting point. If you're a photographer, look for a meetup group in an area that you think might be interesting. If you're a dancer, find a dance group. If you enjoy food, find a group that likes to go to restaurants or cook together at somebody's home. So start by meetup is probably a really good place to go. And from meetup, then you can branch into other areas as you talk to people and say, oh, I didn't know about that. And you'll know if it fits or doesn't fit. If it fits, great. Stick with it and grow with it until it's not working. If it doesn't fit, look for a different group. You will find people that feel like you've come home. You will find that.
Oh, that's a great way to put it. I feel like some of this involves putting yourself out there. Some of that is going to involve a little bit of confidence, at least, versus feeling so totally prepared and ready. And I don't need anybody. I'm going to take on the world myself. Probably not the best mindset for a meetup. But with the four of you coming together for this particular exhibit, and again, taking place, I will say location here formally, it's at the park, which is the Plymouth Arts and Recreation Center. And that is in Plymouth. Everybody knows the park. It's pretty easy. It's one of those, just, it's a staple in the Plymouth community. And it is on Church Street in Plymouth. But if you wanted to, you know, for example, start building some of that confidence and start building that, like, I may not be ready now, but I'm making some baby steps towards that, I would say come out to the exhibit even and talk to one of you, because you're on that journey. And I'm not saying you're at the end of the journey, because I believe that these are always ongoing, but even talking to people that you respect, admire, or are just sort of valuing where they are and learning from them, I think is probably a really good suggestion too. And I know you and the team will be very open to that. Yes?
Absolutely. Everybody in this group, there's four of us, everybody is kind. Everybody is open. All of us would love to see you there. We're happy to answer your questions or just chat with you. There's really nothing to be intimidated about. There's no pretentiousness. It's none of that. We're just normal people who've come together for 7 years toward a common goal. And now we're ready to talk to the public about what we've discovered.
Easy enough, right? We are going to, I'm sure, find a lot of variety in this particular exhibit. And again, it is all photography. Would the question be how many pieces are going to be there, or what is the display? You know, what should we be prepared for? And again, it is currently open, so we don't have to wait until a week from today, February 7th, for the first introduction. But certainly, if you do go in the next week and then come back to that reception, as Joel said, sounds like it's going to be a lovely event. But what are we walking into at the park? Because I know it's a little bit of an unusual style of display, and what should we expect? And is this open to all ages?
It's open to all ages for sure. It is, as far as I know, it's wheelchair accessible, as far as I know. So what you're going to see is you're going to go into a recreation complex. This is a building that houses a basketball gym, right? So the gallery is in a long hallway that runs past the basketball gym. So you're going to see gray cinder block walls with windows on an opposing side. Along one wall, you will see matted and framed beautiful photographs hanging with titles waiting for you. On the other side of that hallway, so if your back is to the pictures now, looking across, what is it, 10, 12 feet to the windows. Below seven windows will be colored pieces of paper in frames with quotations intended to offer food for thought. So, for example, one of them is from a very well-known photographer named Minor White, and he said something like, all photography is self-portraiture. So what are you photographing? You're actually always photographing some aspect of you, something you care about. You're literally channeling your little self through that camera. You go, oh, that's why I photographed that. It's really about you and what you care about. That's really what you're photographing.
That's a really interesting interpretation. And it's sort of terrifying, but inspiring all at the same time, right? I've heard of the sort of the concept of the footprint, you know, the footprint, but now it's, you're getting even deeper into looking into my soul, Joel. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Pathways to the self, right?
Yeah. There it is. There it is. Oh, it's fantastic.
How do you get there? You have to follow, you have to be brave. You do. But I will guarantee that if in your own ways, in your own life, if you do follow the pathways of your heart, and I mean that, the things you care about, it will take you back to you, and you will find places from which you can give to your friends, your family, your community. You will.
We're going to leave you with the with that beautiful statement, Pathways to the Self photography exhibit already underway and going on for your enjoyment. And we certainly hope you will check out this free and beautiful photography exhibit. It is, again, taking place at the Park Plymouth Arts and Recreation Complex on Church Street in Plymouth, running through the middle of March, in fact. And don't forget about that that event taking place a week from today. That is February 7th, 6:30 to 8:30. It is an artist reception, food, beverages, and even music. So what a nice way to start a beautiful weekend with some wonderful photography and some great people. Joel, thank you for all of this today. Can't wait to see the exhibit and look forward to talking with you again in the future about other creative endeavors that you're working on to help make the world a better place. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very, very much. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. We do have more on the WHFR Journal. Again, we're going to move now into the event called A Tale of Our Cities. This discussion took place at a luncheon on January 16th, and this is Mayor Abdallah Hamoud of Dearborn and Mayor Bill Bazzi from Dearborn Heights sharing some information about their view of leadership and vision for Dearborn and Dearborn Heights in 2025. So we now take you to the recording from January 16th of A Tale of Our Cities, right here on WHFR Dearborn. We are the station making waves.
Good afternoon and welcome, everyone. My name is Kelly Vandenbosch. I am the president of the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce. Thank you. Thank you so much. I want to welcome you to the Chamber's first event of 2025, A Tale of Our Cities, featuring Mayor Abdallah Hamoud and Mayor Bazzi of Dearborn and Dearborn Heights. I am thankful for their participation. And on a personal note, I would like to say thank you to them for being such wonderful community partners to the Chamber. It means the world to me. We look forward to hearing from you about what is in store for our cities in the year to come, in 2025. I would also like to recognize my board members that are in and the elected officials that are here in attendance. If you wouldn't mind please standing up for a brief moment so we can applaud you being here. Elected officials and board members, come on now. Please and thank you. That also means the world to me to have you here, so thank you so much. Also, I wanted to thank our sponsors for this event. We have some table sponsors. Mayor Bill Bazzi has a table. Thank you so much, Mayor. Michael Baker International, yep. And SEMCA. A special thank you to our presenting sponsor, Comcast Business. Without their support, we would not be able to offer this type of programming. We are very grateful. Thank you so much. I'd I'd also like to thank Greg and his staff here at Park Place. They are getting ready to serve us a wonderful dinner and or lunch. The delicious food is going to be great. So thank you so much to Greg and his staff and for having this lovely space in the cold of winter. So I'm happy to be here. In the center of your table, this is just some notes to take care of. You will find question cards. So if you would like to ask the mayors a question, please write your questions on these cards and hold them up. We will be by to collect them for you. That is how the question and answer section of this event is going to go. Bless you. Please keep in mind that due to time constraints, not all questions will be answered. We do have time constraints. The mayors do need to be elsewhere shortly. So before Mayor Hamoud joins us, I would like to give a little background of his career highlights. Mayor Abdullah Hamoud has been an unwavering advocate for Dearborn for more than a decade. As mayor, he is committed to reinventing government to deliver results for residents across our city. During his three terms in the Michigan House of Representatives, Mayor Hamoud pushed for resources and policies to improve quality of life in Dearborn, including securing nearly $100 million in direct investment in infrastructure projects. I now invite Mayor Hamoud to the podium for his remarks. Thank you.
Good morning. So we were informed that we have 10 minutes each. I told Bill I'm going to take 5, so he said he's going to take 15. So you can hopefully sleep through his and stay awake during mine. First and foremost, thank you to the Chamber for having us again. This is a phenomenal event that we do annually. Thank you to Mayor Bill Bazzi for being a great partner and to know that he's a Durham Public School graduate. And so we Durham Public School, we graduate our amazing students and then we place them all across the country so we can brag about it. And so hopefully we'll be taking over a city near you fairly soon. I want to talk briefly about some of the accomplishments that we've had over the last year and what's on the horizon. Most immediately, you know, just yesterday we actually launched a new initiative with a startup out of New Lab in downtown Detroit called Hostler. And what this is in all of our fire and police vehicles, we now have Hostler's technology. So what will happen if you're on the roadway, if the fire lights are on or police lights are on, if you're using your Apple Maps on your phone, if you're driving a Stellantis vehicle, if you're using Waze, an emergency vehicle alert will actually now come through your OEM in the middle of the screen, or it will interrupt whatever you're listening to. It'll come up on your Maps function and let you know that an emergency vehicle is right near you. The beautiful thing is it's now also one of our tow truck providers, JT Crova, also has this on there, and we are working with Dearborn Public Schools to incorporate this in our school buses. And once incorporated in our school buses, one of the complaints that we've heard is many drivers are not stopping once the stop signs come out when a school bus comes to a halt. And so we're working with Hostler upon installation on school buses. We can hopefully modify the language of that alert to let you know that a school bus has stopped and you should stop as well. This is just one way that we're trying to improve road safety across the city of Dearborn. It's great to hear that the Michigan Department of Transportation is incorporating this on all of their vehicles across the state. And speaking with the Detroit Fire Commissioner just yesterday, they will be rolling this out as well across their emergency vehicles and their fleet. And as a city that shares the longest border with the city of Detroit, this is something that's just beautiful, because the more connected communities are, the safer we can make our roadways together. So that's one advancement that we just announced yesterday. Secondly, we're continuing with the park investments that we've had. We're dumping now nearly $40 million into rejuvenating our parks across the city of Dearborn. And specifically, I want to speak to inclusive playscapes. Last year, in the late fall, we opened up Crowley Park. It's the first inclusive playscape across the city of Dearborn. It's a $1.5 million investment. We have a second under construction at Ford Woods, and we're actually going to be announcing a third in the coming council meeting. I see some of my council people. You might not know about it yet. We're announcing a third over at Lapeer Park. And what that means is every resident within the city of Dearborn will be within a 10-minute drive of a fully inclusive playscape so that our children, regardless of need, can play together outside. And so that's a beautiful investment that we're going to make and happy that is happening. Lastly, thank you so much. I think the last really major bucket I want to talk about is public safety. We've talked to residents, we've polled our residents, and the number one issue for residents is road safety concern. In the city of Dearborn, we are blessed. We're the second safest large city in the state of Michigan. Our All major crimes are actually down double digits this year. We're hosting a press conference next week to speak about it. But the number one issue that we hear about is speeding and reckless driving. This year, tickets were up 5%. We're cracking down on reckless driving. But we're also we have a multi-component methodology here. What we call, you know, engineering, enforcement, and education. And so our enforcement is up. That's only one aspect of this. You can't ticket the yourself out of the situation. But two, on the engineering aspect, our public health department was able to receive, with the support of State Senator Sylvia Santana, a grant from the Department of Health and Human Services, which we're using to purchase traffic calming measures. So to date, we've already installed about 60 light-up stop signs. We have purchased 300 additional speed humps, which we will be installing this spring around all parks and schools throughout our city. We're applying for a new grant for $200,000 to improve the signage across all of our schools as well. One of the PTA presidents noticed that not all of our schools have school zone signs around them. We are installing about 25 high-rise concrete crosswalks through another $500,000 grant that we received from the Department of Transportation. And we're going to continue on this process of redesigning roads to also ensure that they improve safety for pedestrian foot traffic, for people who are cycling, and just all around anybody who's utilizing the road. And along that line, last year we were awarded $25 million from the Federal Department of Transportation to transform Warren Avenue from Lanyo to Greenfield. It's a 2-mile stretch. 2025 will actually be the year in which we work with our contractors to come up with a brand new design for this, and then hopefully begin construction in 2026 and complete it, God willing, end of 26, if not 2027, and transform Warren Avenue's 2-mile stretch to hopefully stop from having any pedestrian deaths or major injuries along that roadway. And so it's a top focus for ours. It's the number one concern for residents, and we're going to keep at it. And lastly is education. And so we're working with our police department, our courts, and our legal division to bring back the driver's education programming at our courts. It was actually shuttered in 2018 when the individual that led that program retired. And so we're looking to bring that back. But the most important part of education, honestly, is the education that's happening at home. I am not here to raise anybody's children. I have my own, and I'm focused on raising them. What we need is parents to not give their newly minted drivers, you know, I'm a Ford guy, so don't buy him any Dodge Charger or Dodge Hellcat or anything along those lines, but they don't need any 300, 400, 500 horsepower vehicle. And they especially don't need that vehicle wrapped in limo tints. So if you come to me and you complain about speeding and reckless driving, and this happens times and time again, I had one parent come to me saying, the speeding reckless driving on my street is absolutely awful. I said, great. I said, what is your son? How old is your son? He's like 19. I said, what does your son drive? A Maserati. I said, your son is part of the problem. That means you're a part of the problem. We have to have these important conversations. We had a 15-year-old student at Fortson High School that was struck by a vehicle right before the new year. It was a 19-year-old driver who ran a red light, who we believe speeding was a factor, and whose car was tinted with limo tints, including the windshield. Now, on average, a windshield will allow 75% of light to come through. In this specific car, only 16% of light was coming through the windshield, 4% of light was coming through the driver's side window, and 0% of light was coming in the rear windows. It really is an issue, which is why we've been cracking down on this practice. But parents, when your children are taking these vehicles that you are paying for on a monthly basis, your name is on that insurance, understand that you are not risking the life of the young driver you have at home, but you're risking the life of all the drivers that share the roadways each and every single day. In the city of Dearborn, you have Ford Road, Michigan Avenue. We have all the highways coming through us, Warren, Greenfield, Schaefer. We have a lot of traffic on our roads, 50,000 vehicles passing through Dearborn at minimum each and every single day just on Ford Road alone. And so we all have to work collectively to inform and educate the drivers we have at home for all of us to do a better job so we can prevent these tragic accidents from happening. They are all avoidable. We're doing our part, and we're hoping that you'll work with us to do yours as well to help improve the public safety of our city. And I will conclude there, turn it over to Bill Bazzi's thesis, and hopefully answer your questions upon completion. Thank you.
I can just feel the excitement when you speak, and it's fantastic. Thank you so much for everything that you're doing for the city of Dearborn, and I appreciate it very much. And again, just a reminder, if you do have questions, please write out those forms and hold them up, and we will grab them from you. I'm going to introduce Mayor Bill Bazzi. I did want to give you some highlights of his career as well. Born in Lebanon, Mayor Bill Bazzi immigrated to the United States at the age of 12. He served in the Marine Corps from 1984 to 1988 and the Marine Corps Reserves from 1999 to 2016. He's also deployed several times since 9/11. Thank you, sir. During his 21 years of service in the Marine Corps, he served in multiple leadership capacities, including military, police, and an intelligence chief. He has worked with ambassadors, diplomats, and world leaders to rebuild municipal infrastructures, provide humanitarian aid, train foreign militaries, counter terrorist activities, promote democratic governments across the globe while proudly serving the Constitution of the United States of America. Hoorah! I now invite Mayor Bill Bazzi to the podium for his remarks.
I'm actually going to use my notes. Sorry, Mayor. It's going to be more than 15 minutes. I'm just kidding. So good afternoon, everyone. Several years ago, there's a lot of things that, you know, transitions that Dearborn Heights took. And one of the key ones is, IT service. I know in the past, Dearborn Heights used to rely on Dearborn for IT service. So I know with Dearborn Mayor Hamoud, when he took over, he had a bigger vision for IT, wanted to do more, you know, with the city of Dearborn. So we had to basically go kind of branch off, you know, try to do something separate in Dearborn Heights. So we started our own IT department. Sorry, Mayor Hamoud. Stay away from that table, by the way. Can't hire anybody. So we have our IT director. He came in. He really, really transitioned the city. You know, we had a server that was probably like 16 years old. I think a fifth grader could probably would have hacked into our Dearborn Heights system at the time. So with the help of our new IT director, he came in. He really helped transition, you know, put Dearborn Heights ahead of a lot of cities. You know, again, sorry, Mayor Hamoud. So he did the server upgrade. You know, he did 85% of our computer refresh. The new firewall for fiber optic connections. Also our Wi-Fi. You know, we got new Wi-Fi that any residents could come in. They can actually use our Wi-Fi city buildings for free. We were lacking on that portion. We had the online service. People can actually apply for permits or pay for bills online. Our IT director actually brought that, so now residents can pay for their permits. They can actually also pay for their bills online as well. So talking about parks, you know, that's also critical for us. Basically did Van Houten Park. We did a new playscape. We just did a grand opening, you know, a few months ago. And we also did an outdoor fitness center at Daly Park. You know, some of the challenges that we've had in Dearborn Heights, and I know part of, you know, other side of Dearborn, is that the actual flooding that is caused by the Ecorse Creek, and that really impacts the life of our residents, you know, especially a lot of our senior citizens live in that area. So we brought in engineering service to Dearborn Heights. You know, we never had engineering service in Dearborn Heights. You know, we were relying on a contractor to do our engineering service. So I brought engineering in-house, and now our engineer actually is in charge of everything that is water and also infrastructure and, you know, our aging infrastructure. So, you know, we're focused on just making sure that we apply for funding. You know, one of the biggest things that we're working on right now is the Ecorse Creek flood mitigation. And the Army Corps of Engineers, they have several projects, but they're working mostly on this. There's the old incendiary on Powers and Inkster. They're looking at that, so that right now they're in the design phase. So one thing we all learned is don't say studies, because every resident, both Dearborn Heights, they hate the word study, because we have to actually get into the design and implementation phase. So we're working with Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib on some funding, and we're also working with Wayne County Drain Commission to help us. They got $10 million for the Ecorse Creek, and all they're doing on for that money, it's their ARPA money, is to basically clear log jams and, you know, clear obstacles, but they're not doing, you know, they're not really digging into the creek or anything like that. They're just trying to clear the obstacles. But we're also working with the DCC, the Downriver community. And also there's a company called Stantec. There's a 30%, now we're 30% design complete, and they're doing a one mile demonstration. They're gonna basically, that's gonna be try to clear some obstacles in that 1 mile, and this is one of the most flood prone areas in the city of Dearborn Heights. So the biggest projects we're working on right now is the water distribution system. So with that, you know, we have so many water main breaks in the city of Dearborn Heights. You know, I remember both in the DCC meetings and I've had with the CWW meetings, I mentioned one November we had 30 water mains. And I think every mayor that was in both conferences, they're like, my God, the whole conference doesn't even have that in just, you know, 1 month. Dearborn Heights had it in 1 month. And that's one of the biggest issues that we're having. A lot of water main breaks. Just like a few days ago, we had two or three in 1 day. And so that's one of the reasons that a lot of residents complain about water bills, and because it does affect their water billing, is when you have these water main breaks. I was told each one costs between $20,000 to $30,000, you know, to fix. You know, that's a lot of money. Just imagine that in November, 30. In just 1 day. I mean, 1 month, sorry. So one of the things that we're actually applying for a lot of grants, you know, we have grants total $17,140,000. That's just for various water improvement projects and, you know, water main replacement. Also, we're working with lead lines. You know, there's a lot of lead lines that we have in the city, as well as the water meter replacement. We have a lot of water meters. They're over 30 years old, and so they have to go. So that's something that we're working on. It's about a two-year process, and residents already receiving letters, and we're going to replace every water meter in the city. Some other capital projects that we're working on, just to kind of highlight, you know, one of the things is I want to thank Senator Santana and also Aaron Burns. You know, they helped us get $10 million funding. For the fire station, a new fire station. One of the fire stations is actually sinking. You know, it's in bad shape, and it was actually completed in 99, but it wasn't built properly. So this is something that we need to replace the fire station. That's the one on Beach Daily. We also got funding for $500,000 from Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib. Thank her for that. You know, that's for the design work for the fire station. We have two bridges in the city on the south end of the city near Van Born. That's about a $2.1 million we got grant, you know, to replace, you know, those bridges. We're also, we have FEMA grants through MSP to help us with the control the Rouge River and also the Ecorse Creek watershed. And that's some of the issues that we have in Dearborn Heights also. We have two watersheds. We have the Ecorse Creek and also we go to Dewa and also Detroit. So Dearborn was wise enough to actually go to one. So that's another factor that we're having in Dearborn Heights. We have two. And that's, I think it was about 13, 14 years ago when they decided to do that. So I know we're working with SIMCOG also. They're helping us with some projects. You know, I want to thank SIMCOG for doing that. And one of the other things that I wanted to cover, you know, we have the same issues in Dearborn Heights with safety, traffic, and I think Mayor Hamoud touched, you know, really well on it. You know, we're pretty much, you know, Dearborn is, you know, neighboring city. We work well with Dearborn. You know, I know we partnered with them on several things, and I know there's a plan talking to the chief, previous chief, and also your chief Shaheen. They're trying to partner on some projects actually to work, you know, with the cities. They can get like a team that can target like different areas, you know, like 3-4 cities. They partner together and they just target like key areas. I think that's a great idea. And also one of the other things that we're you know, we had the Department of Justice, you know, in our city. They were trying to, I know that we had, you know, there was, we had some concerns, but they came in and they helped a lot in, with a police department. They came in and they basically audited our police department to make sure, like, you know, we're up to speed on a lot of things. And they spent about 2 years with the city, so they brought a lot of programs and a lot of new policies. So we're very positive. This is a great year for Dearborn Heights. We have a lot of projects and, you know, the infrastructure. We're applying for a lot of grants, and, you know, we've been very, very lucky with the grants. So I want to thank everybody for being here today, and I think, I don't know if, how they're going to do their questions and answers. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'm going to invite you both back up. We do have several questions that came through.
The first question is for Mayor Hamud. Can you give us any updates on the South End Peace Park?
Yes. So Peace Park was the name of our grant application that helped us draw down over $30 million. Peace Park West and East have been completed. Peace Park South plans have been approved. We had the utility work completed. This is the DTE, AT&T, and Comcast have gone through. Expected completion for Peace Park South is summer 2025.
This question is for both mayors. Both cities share so many similarities. How do each of you work to retain and hire new and current employees, especially as cities and residents want excellent police, fire, and DPW services, as well as recreational opportunities?
You guys giving up my secret here, trying to hire new people. So I think you should close your eyes, Mayor. No, I mean, one of the biggest, you know, biggest things is where we have a lot of union contracts we're going through right now. And I think every city, you know, we've been to a lot of meetings that every mayor, I think throughout the United States and even Canada, they're having issues, you know, getting the right people and keeping them for long periods. And I know some of them, they have issues with trying to keep people even more than 2-3 years. But the best thing is, like, for our city, you know, like police, you know, we have a great, you know, pension, you know, for retirement, police, fire. And we just recently worked on a TPOM for the clerical, offered them a great contract, you know, try to retain employees, you know, get new talent. And it is very challenging for Dearborn Heights because of our budget. And I don't think it's as big as the Dearborn budget, but we're trying to increase revenue so we can offer, you know, higher salaries and try to retain, you know, good talent in Dearborn Heights.
So similarly speaking, we just finished our negotiations actually last year and negotiated 16 union contracts or collective bargaining agreements. And so we had record raises for the first time in the city of Dearborn's history. And so we did a compensation study to assess all the classifications across the region where we stood. And so for the general employees, they looked at anything between 2% to 30% increases based on the last contract. On average, it was about 7%. We also ratified the police and fire contracts. For the first time in 17 years, our police department is fully staffed at 188 officers. We're exploring adding 5 more officers, God willing, by this summer. And our fire department is at 151 firefighters, which is the highest number of firefighters in the city of Dearborn's history. A part of that success was receiving a SAFER grant from the federal government, which pays for 12 of our firefighters for the next 3 years. So we've been very lucky to have a fire chief who's been successful in that. And so if you want to retain staff, you got to pay staff. That's just the honest to God truth. We also amended our contract agreements to allow a 3-2 flex schedule. So 3 in the office, 2 at home if your job permits. And so you really have to look at how you make those improvements. And with the support of council in this last council meeting, we received a grant from the state of Michigan, and we're actually now going to update all of our work environment. And so the cubicles we currently use were donated to us by Ford Motor Company, thank you, back in the 70s. And so we're finally getting rid of the 70s retro look. We're updating, you know, if you want you want high retention rates, make sure when they come to work, they're working in a place that's dignified for the work that they're doing. And hopefully we'll have all those improvements completed by this summer as well.
Thank you. This next question is also for both of you. Can you update us on Dearborn Hills and Warren Valley?
Well, I can tell you Warren Valley's got to look a lot better than any golf course in Dearborn. Sorry. No, Warren Valley right now, we We actually have a concessionaire. So Warren Valley is owned by the city. However, it's leased to the Issa brothers. And they're doing an amazing, amazing job with the banquet hall. They expanded it. And, in the past, most of you probably been to Warren Valley. I think if you put 200 people on second floor, that's packed. And Mr. Issa actually is thinking about between 750 to 800 people comfortably upstairs right now. And so he's putting in also a great steakhouse downstairs, and also a great coffee shop. And golf course, we're 18 holes right now. And possibly this year we're going to look at another 9 holes. But the other, we're thinking about putting also a driving range. And we're trying to get funding for the water mitigation, try to kind of put like a man-made lake for all the water to flow into this one area. And possibly the driving range will be on one side and just shoot the golf balls, floatable balls across the water. And but the fire station is going to be on the other side. Thank you.
Dearborn Hills, that golf course kind of bothered me. Dearborn Hills Golf Course, as you know, when we first came in, we actually moved it to 9 hole to recover from the flooding events. We got $1 million grant, and what we did was go along the entire Rouge River stretch with a machine that cleared out about 52 log jams. Doing that, our course took some damage. We opened up the other 9 holes one season later, just this last year, so we are back at 18 holes. We also felt that the city of Dearborn should not be in the restaurant business. For some reason, we actually in-house the restaurant Dearborn Hills Golf Course. We have since outsourced that to a local vendor, went out for bid. There's a restaurant called Birdie's that will actually open up later this month, if not early February. They're great restaurateurs who operate across the city of Dearborn and other parts of Michigan. So you should look forward to that opening. They've made about $1 million investment into the building. And so it's a great private-public partnership. And so Dearborn Hills hopefully will be back at it this year. I mean, I don't golf. I can't tell you the difference between a green or a fairway or whatever that is. But what I can tell you is our golf course is not, it's not like Mystic Creek Golf Course. Have you been there? That's at Camp Dearborn. It's our 27-hole gem. And it's not Dearborn, it's not our Dearborn Country Club. But Dearborn Hills is your beginner. You want a quick round of golf, come by, check it out. But we're going to have beautiful amenities for you this year.
We'll teach you golf. There's your instructor right there.
Thank you, Mayor. This next question is also for both of you. Are any changes planned for each city's early voting sites?
Early voting sites? So probably a better question for our clerk, from my conversations, our early voting sites will stay as they are. For the city of Dearborn, they are at our Ford Performing Arts Center. We typically open up the gymnasium, and you have all the early voting happening in one space.
I know that it is a clerk's question. However, I know with being on the election commission, we've had success last year, with the election. With early voting, so they do have a couple sites that they can do early voting. I don't have the locations here, but I know the City Hall was one. I believe Crestwood was another.
This next question is for Mayor Hamoud. What is the plan for the Village Plaza building and parking structure?
So Village Plaza, when we came in, we were fairly aggressive on actually fighting blight. And so we took them to the demolition board. We won that course. Then they challenged us in our local courts. We beat them there. Then they appealed to circuit court. We beat them there. Then they appealed to state court, where it currently resides. We have come to agreement with the developer. They are actually doing the asbestos abatement as we speak. The asbestos abatement should be completed by the spring, and the building should be brought down by the late spring, early summer, with the hopes of a development to follow.
Very good. Thank you, Mayor. This next question, sir, is also for you. You talked about it a little bit in your opening remarks, but can you detail a bit more of the improvements along Warren Avenue?
So the goal of the improvements are to improve road safety traffic across the entirety of the Warren Avenue stretch. At the same time, the Warren Avenue has its own business corridor, the equivalent to a DDA. And what we have done in this last year was go out for a full facade redesign as well. to embrace the Arab American business owners that are along the stretch, not only from Lanyo to Greenfield, but Lanyo, frankly, all the way through Southfield, as well as in our conversations with the city of Detroit. And so what we've done, we've actually launched a multi-million dollar facade improvement program for the business owners along Warren Avenue. So in addition to the reconstruction of Warren Avenue fully, so that includes the roads, the sidewalks, the lighting, and all the underground stormwater infrastructure, we're offering grants to the business owners along Warren Avenue up to $200,000. And all that's required for the business owners, a 10% match. And what is required is we come up with a facade design for your building. You agree to that facade design and agree to maintain that for up to 5 years, and you can qualify for those funds. And so basically what we want is, while the design of Warren Avenue is happening with the construction of Warren Avenue, you're also going to see a brand new beautiful look to Warren Avenue. And that should all be completed by 2027.
Thank you. This next question, Mayor Mazzei, is for you. You touched upon the location of the new fire station, but the person who wrote the question wants to know, how will residents be impacted by the new location?
Okay, so, you know, as I mentioned earlier, with the grant that we received from, federal grant from Rashida Tlaib, Congresswoman, we're doing a design work right now, so that's one of the things that we got to talk to the residents to see the impact that will be in the, you know, for that residents. So I'm sure they'll be they'll set up meetings with the residents just to see what the impact will be.
We were just going over the next question. This is for Mayor Mood. What is the plan for improving cloudy water?
Every city has. Like the glue one. That's glue
one. Is that your question?
Yes, sir.
Oh.
So it's been, we've called several times. The fire department, they said when they flush out the fire department, sometimes there's sand. But
yeah,
we haven't used our fountains in years. If you filled up a coffee pot from the faucet, a lot of time it's very cloudy. Same thing with the toilet bowls.
Yeah.
You flush them, and it, I don't know if it has really anything to do with the fire hydrants, but, you know, we have the other building with variations next door, and I think they're having the same issue. It's cloudy water.
Yeah.
And it seems to happen most of the time. You know, it's not just here and there.
I am wise enough at this point to know, to answer what I know and to not answer what I don't know. And so I'll take your information and follow up with you once I gather more evidence.
Thank you, Mayor.
This question for the two mayors, what are you guys? The question is that with the upcoming administration next week, we might be expecting some visitors from the ICE agency to the immigrants community in both cities. If there is any plan, how are you going to work with this issue? Thank you.
Your administration, you want to start?
I'll find out next week. I know we there's a meeting that we do monthly. It's called Bridges Meeting, and Bridges Meeting, it was started many years ago under different administrations, both Republican and Democrats. One of the key issues, you know, that is discussed at the Bridges Meeting. Well, first, every entity is represented at Bridges Meeting. So we just had one last week. I think we can have. They talk about the issues, you know, with so ICE is actually at the meeting, Department of Homeland Security, the FBI. There's different agencies, other agencies are also present. And that's some of the issues that they talk about. You know, whatever that community has issues with any of those entities, government entities, they actually go through and address them. So I advise you, like, if you have any particular concern, you know, to bring those up. And I usually go to every meeting. For the last several years, we've been attending. But I mean, right now, there's I don't know what the concern is, because we haven't heard anything. I mean, I, as a mayor, I haven't heard nothing, because they usually, if anybody's going to come through any type of I guess law enforcement or anything like that, you know, they will get a hold of our police department. So we haven't heard any. I haven't heard anything yet. And we're just in a meeting a week and a half ago.
So I'll try to answer this based on the experience of what happened in 2016. In 2016, how Dearborn residents were largely impacted was actually through the Muslim ban. When the Muslim ban came in, a lot of folks who were here documented legally with visas, their visas were canceled. Many of them were actually trapped overseas in the country of Yemen. And if you're aware right now, there's no U.S. embassy in Yemen. They had to try to make it out to the nearest country in Djibouti, try to get a visa renewed. And so for us, our major concern is what happens if a ban like that is brought into effect and how it will take the documented legal immigrants we have in the city of Dearborn and effectively reject and cancel the visas that they currently have. That is the biggest concern that we have and something that we're watching. And we obviously won't know until you see some sort of executive action taken. And we'll have to work with appropriate legal teams, nonprofit organizations to understand what those impacts will be on the residents of the city of Dearborn. Yeah.
Mayor Hamoud, the final question is for you. Can you update us on the former Hyatt Regency Edward Hotel complex?
Hoping to get away without answering this one.
Just for you, sir.
Yeah, so, oh, where's Sue? So the media is in here, so I won't give too much away. You know, the three biggest blighted buildings in Dearborn, largely speaking, you have the Oakman Boulevard Apartments, which are three apartment buildings on Oakman Boulevard near Michigan Avenue. Demo contract was just approved this last council meeting, and those will be brought down in the spring. You have Village Plaza, just give you that update, that building will be brought down by this summer. Then you have the Hyatt Building. The Hyatt Building went through a sheriff's auction most recently, just a few months ago, and you have a new owner out of Florida. Now, we have had many a conversations with this developer, and they have brought forth what their plans are. I can't speak more than that at this point. I'm kind of the individual that I don't want to give hope if hope is not there yet because this building has gone through so many owners. But we're a little bit more optimistic with this developer, God willing. And so hopefully we'll have something to announce in the next few months.
And that will wrap up A Tale of Our Cities, originally taking place on the 16th of January here in our community. Many thanks to Mayor Bill Bazzi of Dearborn Heights, Mayor Abdullah Hamoud from Dearborn, as well as Kelly Vanden Bosch from the Chamber of Commerce in Dearborn, and our dear friend, John Zedekian. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. Do something special on this very last day of January. And here's to new beginnings and warmer weather next month. Have a great one. And thank you for tuning in to the WHFR Journal. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Time. That's where my baby stays.